November 5th, 2019 work session for the Springfield Planning Commission. I'll go ahead and take attendance. The chair is here. The vice chair is remotely here. Commissioner Bose?
Here.
Commissioner Landon?
Present.
Commissioner Bergen?
Here.
Commissioner Hill? And Commissioner McGinn?
Here. She's excused. Commissioner Hill is not.
Okay. We only have one work session item tonight, which is the Main Street Safety Project update. Ollie Markarian, our senior planner. Area.
We were last through June, had to talk about the Main Street Safety Project. And since then, our project team has developed several alternatives for consideration. And so what we'd like to do tonight is to walk through the process that we went through to develop those solutions and to seek your feedback on various elements of each solution. Feel free to ask questions as we go along. There's a lot of material. Questions and comments as we go through the presentation. A couple of weeks ago, we met with our technical advisory committee and our strategic advisory committee and stakeholders. Well, tonight and next week, City Council and Main Street Government. Then we're sharing these alternative solutions with the community at large. Feedback we get every group will help inform the development of refined alternatives, finding out with others where it makes sense to help these cases find the alternatives.
Quick interruption. Just note that Commissioner Gill has joined us. We're all present. Carry on. Did you hear that, Troy?
No, what was that?
Please mute your end, and can you hear okay?
Yes. Is there noise coming on my end?
Yes.
Oh, sorry about that. That's strange.
Okay. Thanks. Carry on, please.
So, as I noted, we have initial preliminary alternatives, and then we're going through this refinement process and getting input from all of the stakeholder groups and the community at large. And then we'll be moving on to three refined alternative solutions, and of course the no-build alternative to compare that to, and then move down to one eventually recommended alternative. At the June work session, if you recall, we reviewed the key principles and methodology for access management and sought your feedback on that. And those key principles and methodology will be used when we get to the design phase in the event that we need to look at any access modifications. So following your meeting in June, we went to the City Council and then to the Main Street Governance Team, and they ultimately endorsed those key principles and methodology for us to share with property owners via a mailer in mid-August to 650 property owners and business owners on the corridor. And we explained the key principles and methodology, and we offered several options that when they could give us feedback on those. And we had follow-up communication with about a dozen property owners, and three property owners requested a more formalized review through what's called a collaborative discussion, and we had those collaborative discussions this week. into the key elements of the alternative solutions along the extent of the corridor. We're looking at both signalized intersections and roundabout intersections. We're looking at a raised median along the corridor. Every solution package that we're presenting includes a raised median. They all include a different number of breaks. And then all of the solutions include enhanced corridor transit, which is also in July. The Main Street Governance Team recommended enhanced corridor transit mode, build alternative on Main Street. So we want to make sure that any safety solution that moves forward can accommodate
Is there a description anywhere of what the enhanced corridor or enhanced transit system is?
There is on the project website, but also the state version is looking at the stop signal on the corridor and figuring out what the implications are of this
stop outside of the traffic.
That has been brought up at several meetings. There hasn't been any decision made on that point.
Is that going to be possibly more expensive and funding will limit the possibilities of doing that?
If there's additional space for a bus to pull out of a travel lane, then that is more right-of-way impact. It also presents some challenges with buses merging back into traffic, and that can cause some transit delays. But the details haven't been figured out of is that moving forward? What would that look like? Where would it be applied? At this level of the planning process, we're just identifying the transit mode and alignment.
So back in 2016, as part of the Maine McVeigh Transit Study, the Main Street Governance Team provided the transit study project team with direction to narrow design concepts on Main Street to minimize and avoid impacts to businesses to within 96 feet or less on the corridor, and we are using that as the benchmark for at most what we would be looking at for various solutions for the safety project as well. But as I go through the presentation, I'll note where there may be some considerations for possibly wider or narrower.
And existing is about approximately 80 feet, is that correct?
So as we go through the alternatives, I'll note these various other elements varying in the solutions. Right now, we have largely curb-type sidewalks on Main Street. There are some areas where we do see a bit of a buffer, as in the picture at right. And then we looked at a variety of bike facilities and what might make sense, both on the street and then also considering possibilities for separating bike facilities and then also having looking at options for shared use path and a raised bike track. And then you won't see this in the cross sections, but I do want to point out that we are considering systemic safety improvements for enhanced street lighting, more enhanced mid-block pedestrian crossings on the street, and then possibly consolidating access points on the street. Solution packages are organized around themes. A, which is to minimize conflict, focus on reducing conflict alternative solution B is removing habits that we don't need to convert to the next step. And then alternative solution C is avoiding to pull out current standards.
As we look at each solution, reminded of almost all of the elements that are shown in the question. And so we're showing four solution packages for conversation
like, for instance, a bike lane, that's actually from where
where the curve goes vertical. So that only likely also includes the gutter pan, the concrete gutter pan, and any catch basins or any other things that are in that gutter pan. That's still correct.
Solution D, there's more enhanced.
Is that limited to the option D?
No, I mean, that's one of those things that we can mix and match depending on, I mean, there are trade-offs for every element, and so, yeah.
With Daisy Street being reconfigured to become a major bicycle transit route, to what extent does that shape the thinking on bicycle enhancements on Main Street?
So we talked about this with our strategic advisory committee as well, and an important consideration on Main Street is enabling folks to be able to access destinations on Main Street by all modes of travel safely. And so while Virginia Daisy is an alternate east-west corridor, people would then still need to get to Main Street to access Main Street, so needing to provide comfortable.
Because I imagine that there's probably alternative because of the fact that Daisy Street only extends to Strong Parkway, so you still have that point out to 72nd to look at SOMA in a different fashion.
And 32nd as well. So that's 32nd. But it's still better than what there is on the north side, because the north side's, other than E Street, there's...
The idea with the Daisy is once you reach 28th, you can move down to the Mill Path, and
that's true,
and go west from there.
28th, you can get
28, or
yeah, yeah. If you want, you go across Willamette.
Well, no, I guess it's 32nd Street.
32nd
down where the
path on the south center side is. Of the Sports Center.
Okay, thank you.
Cemented. It's nicely done.
I would also say, like, we're humans, and we're always going to take the quickest, easiest route. And if we create all of this extra work and distance for people biking, it kind of discourages them from biking because it's not as easy or fast or direct to get there. So if we allow people to bike on Main Street, then they can see a shop maybe they haven't seen before.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's the idea again, as she stated, of providing for business access for bicycles.
Yeah.
Well, some of what I liked about particularly A and D is the fact that, you know, you give a larger bike lane, you have a buffer, and I mean, I've ridden bikes down Main Street, and frankly, we do it because it's efficient, okay? Like you said, I don't really want to drive all over town if I'm just trying to get point A to point B. And what we have there now with a 5-foot and basically no buffer is sometimes a little scary.
Main Street for bicyclists right now is really dangerous. You got a truck coming by you at 40 miles an hour in the rain and the dark.
Mr. Gill.
So in A, are the median brakes only where there are lights?
Well, they would be at arterial and collector intersections, so there could be signals or there could be roundabouts there.
Okay. But that's where the left turn lanes would be, so there's no, those are the places where the left, okay, yeah, I just want to clarify, thanks.
So alternative solution B, again, is the minimal impacts solution, so slightly more median breaks, so in addition to the collectors and arterials, also at local streets, there would be median breaks. And with both alternative solution B and C, there would be a need to redo signals to enable U-turns.
Can I jump in? I'd like to add a little bit to that answer. So there are 14 locations with alternative A that would have breaks. There's some that don't currently have signals. So if you think about Mountgate Drive, how that is access for a big neighborhood, that is a collector. So there would be an access point there. Another example is like 37th Street. Some locations that don't currently have signals but are the larger streets that are collecting more traffic.
Okay. For this alternative solution, this assumes sidewalk reconstruction because it would be widening the sidewalk. Again, alternative solution C is based on current ODOT standards. Main Street, we've talked about this before, has developed over time. And so our current street is not to ODOT, current ODOT standards. This alternative solution has more breaks and left turns onto Main Street, but would only have U-turns at signals or roundabouts.
This would also be the lowest cost, I assume.
No.
I believe, no build, but then I believe B is the lowest cost.
ODOT would be a pretty significant cost.
Right. The one that minimizes right-of-way impacts is
right.
Showing is.
So yeah, it's wider sidewalks. You'd have to tear the curbs out, build a median.
Oh, okay.
It's a pretty significant amount of work.
And then alternative solution D shows roundabouts with the addition of two new roundabouts at 36th and,
Forty-eighth
and 36th to slow speeds and enhance accessibility to businesses on the corridor. This one similarly shows median breaks at the arterial and collector streets. And then includes a raised cycle track behind the curb. It's the widest overall footprint. It's the one that is at 96 feet. And then it's the only alternative solution with a landscape strip behind the curb.
Could there be an instance where you could have, for instance, the wide cycle track and sidewalk on one side and just kind of offset the So and maybe enhance crossings to get back for bikes and peds to get across to that enhanced side?
I don't know if Michael or Brian want to address that, and as part of that, maybe address the two-way versus one-way cycle track. And
right,
stuff.
Just like the commissioner said a moment ago, if your destination's on one side, you're not going to want to cross over to travel east and west and then cross back.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, then people will travel bi-directionally in whatever facility was put on that's behind the sidewalk. So in the idea of a 7-foot and 6-foot element, 7-foot bike and 6-foot sidewalk, it's shown as one direction on the bike, but I believe that people will be traveling both directions. And if they're at the same exact elevation, even with pavement texture differences or pavement material differences, people are still going to use all of that area, functionally 13 feet, for both purposes. So mm-hmm. It will, in essence, be a shared use facility. So there's pros and cons to that. But I don't think that having only one side providing the facility and then a minimal sidewalk on the opposing side will be effectively used.
Okay.
We show two cross-sections for alternative solution D, one east of Bob Straub Parkway and one west of Bob Straub Parkway. we've talked in the past that east of Bobstrom Parkway falls under ODOT Freight's reduction review route. So consideration for over-dimension freight vehicles. And so that's why we're showing two different cross-sections.
Which is which?
The
west up top.
West, yeah, and then east down below. And that's another reason why we aren't showing street trees on the east portion that
But other than the sidewalk width, I'm not seeing...
The median is...
Oh, median is narrower, okay.
And then something else with this alternative that we've talked about currently in the Springfield Development Code, there for new development or redevelopment, there's a requirement for a landscape strip, and so we're talking about possibly recommending a possibility for swapping that with what would be required as part of this landscape strip in this solution.
Maybe you'll get to it, but especially this one, which, I'll be honest, as a cyclist I like, but what kind of pushback are we getting maybe from local landowners?
We will definitely be getting to that. So we have had, we have varying interests on the corridor. So we have people who love it for cycling and walkability, and we have people who have concerns about the right-of-way impacts to their property. But I'll get to more details. And alternative solution D is more in line with the standards that ODOT's moving towards for urban corridors. At last time we were with you, we talked about how we moved from learning about the values that the community wants the city to consider and ODOT to consider in coming up with these solutions, and that we then moved into developing goals and objectives for the project, and then solutions evaluation criteria. And so now is when we're applying that criteria to help us screen and evaluate the various solutions. And so for each alternative solution, we looked at how well it meets the objectives of the project as compared to the no-build solution. And we talk about it more as a consumer report style of reporting, looking at strengths and weaknesses of the various alternative solutions. And we use, for some criteria, qualitative assessments are appropriate, and for others, it's more quantitative. And so that's in part of that mixing is leads to the qualitative reporting out of it. So starting with the safety goal, the evaluation criteria is focused on crash reduction, and all of the alternatives can do a significant job of reducing crashes on the corridor. And these are some of the key drivers. Medians bring huge crash reduction potential to Main Street. It's the largest contributor to safety improvements and has the potential to reduce crashes overall by nearly 60%. The alternatives A and D with the roundabouts also have a huge crash reduction potential, and alternative D more so than A because of the additional roundabouts. So, in terms of speed, narrower travel lanes in solutions A and B, and then the landscaping with vertical elements with the trees, and in alternative solution D, and then also the additional controlled intersections in alternative solution D have the potential to reduce speeds the most. We see that in alternative solutions B and C. They don't do much to change walking and biking compared to today, whereas alternatives A and D do. One of the biggest factors for the business community criteria is how the various solutions might change the accessibility of properties. So how out of direction travel might affect properties. And then the delay. So what we're showing here is what the delay would be for passenger vehicles on Main Street under the various scenarios. Solutions A and D perform better due to roundabouts. And D, again, with more U-turn opportunities, performs better. We know that the delay, especially for B and C, is not what we're aiming for. And so as we move towards the refined solutions, we're going to be looking closely at how to come up with more the solutions that don't create so much delay on the corridor. I don't know if, do you think it would be helpful to talk about the 55 seconds of delay as the basis? Our consultants, when they were trying to explain to the technical advisory committee and the strategic advisory committee kind of what we might consider as a benchmark for delay, like what are people willing to tolerate? It's my understanding that putting a new signal in on the corridor would result in 55 seconds of delay, and this city would be willing to do that, and so that's, you know, tolerable.
Could you define delay? Does that mean at a stop, or does that mean being slowed down, or both?
That means being slowed down, so going from mid-block to be able to come back to mid-block, having made a U-turn.
Could it be, it'd be either one? Then. Mm-hmm.
So we can modify signalized intersections for passenger cars, but for freight, it is more challenging. So that's why the roundabouts alternatives show less delay in that regard. What this map is showing is that if signals move forward as the intersection type, we are making the assumption that freight vehicles can only reroute using collector and arterial streets, and there are segments of the corridor that have very little connectivity options. And so we're showing here with the darker lines, especially the area where International Paper is, where we would have significant challenges in providing alternate routes for freight. So this is the table looking at the alternative solutions relative to the business community criteria. And again, at this stage with the preliminary alternatives, we're looking mostly at out-of-direction travel times. And then when we move into the refined stage and we have a better sense of possible property impacts from right-of-ways, from the intersections, then we can refine our evaluation of the alternatives. Looking at mobility, we talked about this earlier, the reduction review route for freight. We're looking at impacts, both horizontal and vertical impacts, to how that would affect oversized, over-dimensioned loads that are permitted on Main Street. And the key finding from our analysis is that likely we'll need a different cross-section for east of Bobstrop compared to west of Bobstrop. So for mobility, we're looking at delay to both passenger vehicles, freight vehicles, emergency service vehicles, and how we can mitigate that. Roundabout significantly reduced delay. Signals slightly increased delay. And then we have been talking about a mountable median, a traversable median, when we talk about the raised median, to limit the impact to emergency vehicle travel times.
Question? You had the third bullet, you know, meet ODOT's freight vehicle mobility standards on. I noticed that A is green, D is red. Why the difference?
I'm happy to speak to this. So we were just talking about this one earlier, and we want to add a footnote in here that talks about the reduction review process. So we're actually recommending that B and D change to moderately conflicts, but isn't a showstopper. It's just there's a process that you have to go through with ODOT to work with freight and get to yes with them. So there's some work to be done, is what that means.
Okay, thank you.
It's not an automatic yes.
So looking at the transportation choices, slightly wider bike and pedestrian facilities are an improvement over the no-build, but clearly the buffered bike lane and the cycle track with the landscape buffers make a significant improvement to bicycle and pedestrian comfort. Michael, do you want to talk briefly about the access density?
Sure. So access density along the corridor for the different solutions, frequency essentially, how do I always try this?
Well, so the especially with the cycle track option, while that's an improvement for bicycles and pedestrians as a facility, given the number of access points on the corridor, it actually could create more stress.
Oh, okay. How that works is when you have a landscaping buffer, and if you have people coming in opposite directions, if you have that offset that's a little too far, it's not really in the visual cone of 15 degrees that's typical for a driver. So when the bike lane is directly adjacent to the travel lane, you see a bicyclist, you identify them very well. If they're over even farther and there's a landscaping strip in the middle, you're less likely to see them when you do a right hook. That kind of compounds with the number of access locations in terms of the number of buffers that you have there, and increases the number of conflicts that deal with that vision as you're coming through. So while you feel a little safer on the offset, the people may not see you as well. And so having a large number of access points with that configuration is problematic because you're introducing so many conflicts, whereas when you have much more accesses, it's much more likely to see them when they're that adjacent. So there may be some benefit with having the lane right next to you if you can't access management your corridor, but if you can reduce the number of access points down, it brings D to a higher level in terms of safety and operation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I was going to say, don't you end up with kind of the same thing that we have up on, you know, the Hayden Bridge roundabout? You know, if somebody punches a signal and you just understand that you wait. And there you have plenty of visibility, I guess.
Yeah. You know, the roundabout's kind of a different...
Michael was describing the segment between intersections. but you've got a lot of driveways, and so...
Oh, okay, okay.
Now, at the roundabout, your point is well taken, is that there are facilities added so that the cyclists can press the button, get a warnings.
No, you answered the question. The issue is driveway. It's people coming onto the roadways, not necessarily expecting...
Right.
Okay.
I think it would be more likely the people who are coming off of Main Street onto the driveway would, rather than coming onto Main Street, I think they'd probably be able to see the bicyclists.
Yeah.
Probably very well.
Approaching onto Main Street, you're right. It's coming off of Main Street. Yeah.
Exactly.
You kind of put them in a dilemma zone. Mm-hmm. And with the offset that you have there of just 6 feet, mm-hmm. it doesn't give you enough room to pull the car off of the street. So you leave the driver in a dilemma of, do I get hit from behind if somebody's behind me and I stop for mm-hmm. a bicyclist coming in by direction because we can't assure they're coming in one? Or do I run in and have the bicyclist hit me or have me hit the bicyclist?
And another point on that, too, is if a bicyclist feels safer because he's buffered further from Main Street, he's going to be less cautious for those right hooks, too.
Yes.
So it's doubled in my mind.
You know, the further issue, though, is, as you brought out, you could have bidirectional travel mm-hmm. Of the cyclist on that. And if I am at the driveway and I'm looking at what's functionally, for me, a one-way street, mm-hmm. I'm looking left to find my gap, but the cyclist could be coming essentially the wrong direction for our diagram, but in practice will do that, and I don't look for that individual, and so then I turn right and cross them. So it's both an inbound and an outbound from the site issue.
So my understanding, last time we looked at like ODOT's safe range for access points per mile, mm-hmm. and if we were looking at it like a healthy range of cholesterol, like all of us would be taking fish oil right now. We were like way beyond the acceptable range. So are we just making the assumption that option D would be less safe for cyclists if nothing changed with those access points? That's right. And then my other point is that, you know, the bicyclists and the pedestrians, like they're on the sidewalks, they're essentially like, that's their lane of traffic. And if a driver isn't yielding or looking in their vision clearance triangle, like that's on them. Like it does create unsafe conditions. I think 80% of bicyclists who are hit are right hooked. It's a turn conflict, but you know, that is a problem. Like if we have people just coming out like that, you know, into an intersection without looking both ways, because there could be pedestrians walking both ways too. Sure. Like that's, you know, bad driver behavior and, you know, an education opportunity. And, you know, it just seems like it wouldn't be on the cyclist or the pedestrian for going the wrong way when the driver should already be looking both ways.
I can see it particularly for exiting onto Main Street.
Yeah.
But for the turning, right turn off of Main Street, that's a tough one.
I mean, you can make the case, that case about lighted traffic signals versus the roundabouts, people run red lights. That's poor driver behavior. So if we're looking at safety, then we need to think about how people are going to behave. So I hear your point, though.
Yeah.
but the other thing, too, about that separated one is if you're pulling onto Main Street, a lot of cars will pull into that walkway and bikeway waiting for the opportunity to turn onto Main Street, so that's going to be blocking those people pretty frequently too.
Commissioner Lamb.
How much of a problem, I mean, you know, we understand what can be, but historically I have to assume somebody's got a record of, well, what happens if we build a raised bike lane and pedestrian, and has it really been a problem?
So the typical thought by most of the professionals, and with Dan, I'm going to kind of follow up because she's a better bike facility person than me, but is that, you know, having a separated path and having all of those facilities like that is an amenity and is desirable. As I've specifically asked people who are professionals at this if they had studied specifically the access density issue in relation to the safety benefits of having one of those facilities. It's obvious that it's low stress. It's obvious that it's nice to have a separated own path. but they didn't have any answer when I asked last time, and I haven't found any research that specifically looked at separated facilities and the kind of access densities that we have on Main Street.
Yeah, I think as Commissioner McGinley mentioned, you know, Main Street's access density figures far exceed facilities of this type in Oregon. So there aren't that many examples.
Oh, okay, no, that's fair. That's a fair comeback. Emma, I went, she's a cyclist.
Speaking of studies, so when we were asking for input recently at a training saying, so about this, with this many access points, we did get study information about physically changing the elevation of the sidewalk versus the bike facility when they are directly adjacent. So there has been some research done about how to most effectively do that so that people are clear on where the bike space is and where the sidewalk is. That being said, without super high volumes of people walking or biking, I think there's always going to be some people kind of drifting over to one space or the other, even if there's a slight elevation change between those facilities. And then if you do the elevation change, that has cost implications, has more drainage challenges. So there are great facilities, and it's great to have those, but then there's other trade-offs that are coming along with those changes.
It would certainly have to be a graduated elevation change rather than an abrupt change. Otherwise, you really have trouble.
That's true.
Yeah, specifics, but what slant and how does that get built?
Commissioner Gill, did you have something?
I did, but I forgot it. Sorry.
I'm going to do a quick check-in to see if Commissioner Sherwood is still with us, and if so, if he has any questions, we welcome his participation.
Hi there. Yeah, thanks for checking in, Mike. I did have a question about the buffer zone. I want to know if the 5-foot buffer zone was required, or I didn't mean buffer zone, I meant landscape strip. 5 feet was how wide the landscape strip had to be, or if that was just recommended, or if that's just was what was put in there, because I know that talking about 96 feet wide being part of it wider than other options, if a foot out of landscape strip coming out on each side would solve a problem or not.
I think some of the 5 feet is rooted in the 5-foot landscape requirement currently for development, but then also considering street trees and, you know, other obstacles that are in that area.
I'd just like to say, we had some photo examples earlier, like Bob Straw Parkway and other places where you had a really wide multi-use path, and then there's a much wider buffer. And I think those wider buffers are to accommodate more room to kind of store a vehicle in case it gets into that dilemma zone area. So one is a survivable area for a street tree or an effective buffer area for the level of stress acceptable to the bicyclist or pedestrian, whatever facility you're trying to buffer. But a little bit of it also is how much distance you can have for that dilemma zone issue.
That makes sense. Thank you. And my other question was similar to that in the travel lanes on Solution D. You have an 11-foot and a 12-foot. I could see the benefits of having a slightly wider travel lane on the outside. But how much of the difference between Alternative D and other alternatives in that D has a lot of better gradings in a lot of categories, how much of that comes from having a 12-foot travel lane?
The travel lanes factor into some of the scoring, but I would say that the travel lane width doesn't make a big impact. When we're talking about safety, the median has the most potential to improve safety, the intersection types. Those elements are much more substantial. The travel lane width is less significant.
So when you're talking about the 96-foot solution being significantly wider and having a bigger impact, having that 12-foot travel lane there doesn't really, it's not very necessary in terms of the benefits of Solution D, and it makes it wider, right?
Yeah, flexibility within each element, like Molly said earlier.
Wasn't the purpose of the 12-foot, I mean, for the buses and for the big trucks and for the fact that, you know, that they're able to travel without encroachment?
Yeah, and so if there is a curb directly adjacent to the travel lanes, that's why you're also seeing a 1 foot extra shy distance buffer mm-hmm. next to the planter strip. There are requirements if you're right next to a curb versus if it's a bike lane. If there's a bike lane or a buffered bike lane where it's striping on the ground, that's different than being directly adjacent to a planter strip, potentially with a tree in it.
Right.
Or a curb. Or, yeah.
Thank you. That makes sense. Essentially, what I was getting at is one of the downsides I saw to solution D, although there were a lot of upsides, was the width and the impact it would have and the cost to build it. I know that having landscape strips and things like that already are significantly increasing the cost, but I was wondering if cutting out some of that width and things that may be auxiliary and not having that much safety benefit could potentially reduce that 96 feet. That's essentially what I was getting at.
Thank you.
I remembered my comment. Also, a lot of the separated bike and pedestrian thing is for the pedestrians and cyclists, but I know a lot of drivers that are super happy when cyclists are not on the road, so I feel like it's for them too. So when we talk about that, I think it's worth mentioning. And even the buffered, painted buffered bike lanes provide that for drivers as well, not just the single lane bike lane separation. So I just wanted to put that out there. The drivers often like that too.
Can I have just a quick point of clarification? So if we're talking about the landscape strip, you'll have to forgive me, I'm a little congested. The landscape strip between the vehicles and then between the pedestrian and bicycle lanes, how does that work at bus stops? Are pedestrians having to cross that bicycle lane in order to get to the bus?
Yeah, so they've different design. I think it's in the next tech memo that's coming out that shows that there are some designs where you can have people cross over the bike facility and have the bus stop have boarding, off-boarding. There were some concerns expressed about exactly how that boarding works if someone's trying to like load on a mobility device, if it's putting the ramp out and then all of a sudden you're in the bike lane versus in a planter strip. But there are different configurations, and I think bus stops are one of those places that as we go from a big picture, here's the typical for the street, into spot specific design, we'll figure out what makes sense in each location.
Okay. Thank you.
So looking at the vital community goal, adding landscaping in medians or the center part of roundabouts, and then also the sidewalk buffer, has the greatest potential to enhance the streetscape, could also be used to manage stormwater runoff. And then roundabouts can also significantly reduce vehicle speeds, and so that plays a role in the reduction of vehicle speeds. I think the area where really none of the solutions do a great job of meeting the objective of direct routes between residents on either side of Main Street and then Main Street destinations. I think that's more the context of the street than the actual solutions. So feasibility is a big one, and we've received a lot of feedback. I do want to give a caveat to this. These cost estimates, our technical advisory committee has provided a lot of feedback to the project team on these cost estimates, and so we're still continuing to refine them, but you know, it in an order of magnitude kind of gives a sense of the various alternative solutions. If we're going to improve this much of the corridor, it's going to cost a lot of money, bigger footprints, more elements, it's more expensive. So that's why we see that with alternative solution D, for instance. We do want to point out, though, that the cost of the no build is not zero because of ODOT's ADA accessibility settlement. Even doing an overlay, a pavement overlay on Main Street, would trigger the requirement to comply with ADA rules, and there are miles of curb ramps and many traffic signals that would have to be upgraded.
Would alternative A and D, which have extensive use of roundabouts, would they also include estimates of the property acquisition necessary for that? Like, for instance, if I look at 21st Street, there's a number of, I believe, businesses that are in existence right there right now. I'm not sure that they could accommodate a roundabout and still stay in business. Like Hutch's Bicycle, I mean, it has like zero parking now and extreme inaccessibility at the moment. And if we, you know.
So when we get to the refined stage, we're going to be we'll be seeing footprints along of the intersections, and then that's when we'll be able to drill down into the cost estimates.
And then another question is the roundabouts. If we look at, say, the one up on Pioneer Parkway, it seems to be a much smaller radius than, say, the ones on Franklin, which in a way makes the one on Franklin a lot easier to drive, a lot better sight distance, et cetera. The one on Pioneer Parkway, sometimes you can't see where they're coming. So is there a rough design of how big these?
Again, that's coming in the refined stage. Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Vos.
In regard to funding, where are you between the city and ODOT on funding? How much is assured? How much is possible? How much is uncertain? Where is the funding future?
Well, I don't think anything's assured.
Right.
The city did receive an allocation of funds to construct a raised median back in 2016, but ODOT and the city knew that we had to go through this planning process, and so some of those funds have been put towards the planning process, some have been allocated to other projects. What we know, though, is that there's this significant safety problem on Main Street, and the city will continue to rank well in that regard in terms of making improvements through the arts program. But you know, part of the plan as we move forward towards a recommended alternative will be to identify potential funding sources, identify the possibility of phased implementation.
So with phased implementation, would it just be a similar structure to Franklin, where you would get funds for phase one without identifying funds for the next phases?
That's a possibility.
And I suppose also the options is phasing either is to transportation modes or by sections of the corridor.
I think that's a possibility. Yeah.
Also, the feasibility analysis and this last part of this wasn't part of our package. Can we get that?
So all of the tables like this one, are part of Tech Memo 14, which is being finalized.
Okay.
And so when it's finalized, we will send it out. We can also send you the PowerPoint.
I prefer to get the whole.
So we've been talking all the way along. I'd like to hear if you have for the various solutions, if you have anything else to share about what you like and why, or what you don't like and why.
I just have a couple of things I'm pretty concerned about. There was that one portion of one of the charts that none of the solutions worked well for the neighbors In my opinion, that's going to be who is most affected. Of course, the businesses, which will be trafficked by those that live around there. And I think that we need to really take into deep consideration how that's going to affect. I'm thinking of a street specifically, you know, as we've been going through this, the southern streets of Main Street near 42nd, they have the opportunity to go south to Daisy and then out. And when you hit Daisy onto 42nd/Virginia, it's already pretty tight. And if you have a lot of people trying to avoid because they're wanting to go left on Main Street from the south to go out to hit the light, I'm just concerned that there's already a lot of traffic on that area. And if there's some stepping back, figuring out how we can diverge some of the traffic that's going to go, say, for example, out to 42nd to hit that light. Because that's a pretty sharp angle. That's already pretty tough to see with a lot of traffic right there. I know, and the reason that I'm thinking of that specific one is I know people that live over there, it's going to be pretty tough to reroute.
Okay. Just a point of clarification, are you talking about South 42nd and Daisy Street intersection?
Yes, for a traffic light.
Okay. Yeah, actually that's scheduled for a
roundabout.
That's already in the schedule, isn't it?
I may have missed that.
Yeah, sometimes it should really improve things. Yeah, that's a terrible intersection now.
It is.
Yeah.
But the idea sometimes. Of traffic avoiding stuff, going off to the sides is an important point, regardless of the intersection.
Commissioner Wall.
Thanks for bringing that.
One thing I noticed is under consideration is a traffic signal at the intersection of Mountain Gate and Main. Mm-hmm. Now, I have to presume that for that to be considered, there's been data collected on.
So that's in the TSP.
Pardon me?
That's in the TSP. Oh. It's a project in the transportation system plan. It's,
it was noted here.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because visually to me, I don't see a lot of traffic from Mountain Gate going down to Main Street. But again, perhaps there's high peak travel times or whatnot that would create the count, because there's very little traffic off peak.
So we can get you information on what led to that going into the TSP.
And that would be the only signal along Main Street if it's all roundabouted, or would that be converted to a roundabout?
It could be.
It depends on when it would be implemented.
I guess it would be to the goal. I think we kind of have a policy of looking at both to see which is the superior form at that location. So there's different warrants associated with traffic signals, noted volumes is one. There's also network connectivity. We look at operations in terms of flow, freight reduction route, and we'd also look at safety. So we'd look at both of them in an analysis for what we would do at that location.
I would suggest that most people who live in Mountain Gate know that the left turn onto Main Street is challenging, so they go out to the south and end up on Bob Straw Parkway.
That's true.
Mr. Hill.
The hill.
So, I noticed that. So, I'm assuming the primary point of all of this is trying to limit the crash situation. I noticed that all of them have the raised median option. And it was really great to see these charts. So that was super helpful tonight. So thank you for those. So I'm curious, that's kind of the deal, which is the thing that causes the other probably most challenging thing, which is the access to the places on Main Street. So I think it would be helpful to know in the solutions when we get those crash number differences, where it's the roundabout solution an extra light or extra intersection controls versus the median, I think that would be helpful for people to see. Because it's not clear. On those ones that have multiple of that, and the
right.
number really was
it
a good
be in
impact.
Our memo. But thank you.
So
that's
I think it would be helpful for people mm-hmm. to see that sort of breakout of those.
Are you talking about comparing signal lights versus roundabouts?
I think
well,
compare
that,
the
but the
median.
And the median versus because when you look at it for the whole solution for the whole alternative, right? When you're looking at the alternative that has the median and roundabouts, the number's really great. How much of that is from the roundabout and how much is from the median? Just so people can see the impact of the median.
Well,
okay,
and we
okay.
talked today
so,
about in the refined stage of having those criteria charts with the solutions for the segments in between the intersections and then for the intersections, which gets
nice.
At what you're talking
yeah.
about.
Too. Yeah, that would be helpful.
Commissioner McGinley.
So I'm really excited about option D because I feel like this is like a once in a planning lifetime opportunity to redo like the street that defines our city. You know, our city's built around Main Street. For the following reasons. I wrote them down because I tend to ramble. So it mirrors investments that we've already made. It's most similar to the Franklin Boulevard phase. So right now we only see roundabouts, but if you look at the full plan through Glenwood, you know, that's what the street is going to look like. It's actually a little bit wider because there's dedicated bus lanes on Franklin. So this would be narrower, but it kind of reflects that and shows where we've already decided to head. It provides more access to the city to more people. So it makes it more comfortable for all types of users to be on that street. And then there's studies that show that property values increase when you put protected bike lanes in. There's also a few studies, you know, there's one, bikes mean business, that when you make places easier to bike to and walk to, that people actually spend more money. There was a more recent one published in Toronto that I can send out to everybody.
It'd be interesting.
Most importantly, it makes people safer. You know, people are dying on this street, and if we can prevent that, you know, even just one, that's a human life. And then also with people talking about comfort, the opportunity to add trees to me is huge. To be able to reduce the urban heat island, so areas with asphalt get really, really hot, like hotter than any other area. And if you have to walk somewhere or have to bike somewhere or have to wait for the bus, to be out in the heat, and we've been seeing some extreme heat lately, it's really uncomfortable and it can be deadly. And so any opportunity to get more trees out there is really important to me, but those are my reasons.
Commissioner Vos.
You've, in my mind anyway, presented this as looking at either A or B or C, et cetera. Isn't it possible when you finally get done the final analysis to end up with a blend of alternatives rather than saying it's going to be all of A or all of B, all of C? One alternative for one mode, vehicle traffic, another alternative, the package within that alternative being for ultimately the conclusion for bicycle travel, rather than saying it's going to be either A or B in its within that package rather than possibly being a combination of alternatives?
Well, yeah, I mean, what we're looking for is feedback on the elements
right.
now, because we put together the packages to show an example of how it mm-hmm. might work together, yeah. and when we then in the next stage, we'll be putting together different alternatives
right.
based on
right.
the feedback.
Because that would make it difficult to say we prefer A, B, C, or D, because it could be a combination of two or three.
Right, and in fact, when we were in the process of putting together the content for our online open house, it'll go out to the community, and the questions we're asking don't focus on do you like A or B or C, it's how do you feel about the median, this
right.
is how
right.
it
yeah,
might look. Yeah,
right.
so
right.
yeah.
Commissioner Gill.
So I felt like it was pretty clear that you were showing what the packages are, but that those were to explain the elements. And I thought that they were really helpful. I thought that the explanation of sort of the themes of them were useful. because it helped me think about, okay, these elements achieve these things. And so whatever combination might be, if you want to achieve that kind of thing, these are the ones to start looking at for. So I found it helpful and didn't feel like I was stuck in one or the other. But asking questions that way I think would be really helpful for people. I am also a fan of some planted median of some kind, in the middle for sure, plantings, and then on the, along the sidewalks. I'm also a really big fan of the enhanced bus waiting areas. I see people all the time. There are people that have to ride the bus. And I know we want more people to try to ride the bus. That takes a lot of other stuff that needs to happen in these two, in both Eugene and Springfield. But there are people that have to, and I see them all the time. And if they can have nice places to wait that feel safe and are more comfortable, I think that is an important thing. Thanks.
Mr. Ladin?
Probably, you may have already answered this. What kind of feedback are we getting from the community, the other groups?
So we've met with the Strategic Advisory Committee a few weeks ago, and then in terms of the broader community, that's what we're starting in the coming weeks with our focus groups and our online open house and our local access meetings with business and property owners. But on the Strategic Advisory Committee, those folks all represent different interests. They have different values. We had people who were similar to you all, super excited about D, and excited about B, and enhancing opportunities for safe bike and pedestrian travel. We have folks also really concerned about possible property impacts associated with those very same solutions. And so it really comes down to the trade-offs that the city council will ultimately have to make about. And I think the landscaping is a great example because a lot of people are drawn to a landscaped median, a landscaped buffer with trees, and that has improvements for urban heat island effects and also for stormwater management. At the same time, it costs a lot of money to both establish that type of landscaping and vegetation and then to maintain it, both in terms of manpower and machinery. For instance, the city would have to purchase specific sweeping equipment for a separated bike and ped facility. And so without willingness to make those kind of investments, we can't have the green landscape. So those are trade-offs.
Thank you.
Wanted to check in with everyone. Do you have any comments at this point?
I guess the biggest comment I've heard from the community, and I'm sure you'll hear more of this, is the traffic controls for pedestrians specifically. You know, those are awesome. They're really great, but you can't force people to use them. And in fact, a lot of people, the feedback that I've heard is when you're driving and you see people not use them, it feels like we're putting money somewhere that isn't necessarily being utilized by those that we're trying to make it more safe for them. And I'm hearing that from people that live along the corridor, but maybe not specifically on Main Street. And so for them, they're already having this feeling of all these changes that aren't benefiting because people aren't utilizing them. And so I think my biggest takeaway from people that I've heard in the community is we live here, and it's going to be making it really difficult for us, and we're the ones that are using the street the most. So I really want to, I don't want to put too much emphasis, but just enough to say a lot of the medians that are being put in, that is going to have a big effect on a lot of the people, the residents. And if there's only 14 or 18 different points of access for the side streets, I think that's going to be a huge deal for our community. It's a lot of residents right there.
Checking in again with Commissioner Sherwood.
five packages between different plans that can meet multiple different users' types benefits. And I think the idea of more roundabouts and less signals on Main will significantly increase the amount people are willing and happy to flow along Main Street, but in cars, bicycles, pedestrians, everything. I think it would significantly improve safety. I am curious to hear in the future what funding opportunities look like, because I think that will really pin down what options we actually have feasibly. So, but I love the packet that's been put together. It's been extremely informational.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Commissioner. I'd like to go ahead and weigh in and say that I attended the council session where this was discussed, and there was a real discussion of mixing and matching solutions along the corridor so that there wasn't, like, even though these packages might be great for a situation where you were, say, building a new road, that there weren't a lot of existing businesses and a lot of cross streets and a lot of driveways, that there was a lot of emphasis on, well, maybe there might be a section that might be best no build. Maybe there's a section that really, like I was saying at 21st, perhaps the businesses there, if you want to keep those viable businesses there, maybe that's one instance that you want to keep a signal. It's a fairly low speed section of Main Street, so maybe that is one area. So that's what I caught from the council session, is we need to have a nuanced approach that incorporates a bunch of these different ideas. We need to try to get along with ODOT as best as we can. And the other thing that immediately came to my mind was that we can't allow U-turns at all in mid-block, according to state law. I saw that in the package.
Well, we have that clarified. There can be, at unsignalized intersections, additional U-turn opportunities.
Okay. And then the other thing that I really want to bring forward is, to me, cost is also should be a big object in this. And I'm looking right now at, without real discussion of what the size of the roundabouts are going to be or acquisition costs for right of way, that we're looking at between 40 to 75 million for no roundabouts and 105 to 135 million for roundabouts. And to me, in a working class community, I think that that might be a little bit more of a Cadillac than we really need for Main Street, in my opinion. Commissioner Volz.
As a theme, I know that roundabouts have just recently come into vogue as intersection options. And I know in many cases they're ideal. They've actually been the perfect solution. But I'm beginning to think, and again, I'm a couple steps away from the specific planning on individual intersections, because I'm becoming to the thought that we're over-relying on roundabouts to solve all intersection issues. And I'm not sure, and again, I'm a couple steps away from the specifics on individual intersections, but that is what I'm beginning to believe, that all of a sudden roundabouts are the only solution in many cases, and I don't really think that they are.
Commissioner Gill.
I think the conversation about roundabouts is going to be a pretty big deal, as much as we might have great studies that talk about safety and how they limit the red light run crashes and environmental impacts of them. I know I hear on the daily people complain about roundabouts. So as you reach out to the community, I don't know what the solution is to help people get over that, but just know it's a thing. I hear it a lot from a variety of people. I'm sure you already know it's a thing. You've lived with Glenwood and everything else. But anyway, I just it'll be worth figuring out other ways to address it and continue to bring up the what the benefits are and what areas they might make the most sense. And then the other thing that I always am challenged with this whole project, is we talk about all the things that reduce speed, but then we talk about not wanting to impact how long it takes people to get to places. And, like, those to me fight each other a little bit, so I don't know. I just somehow clarifying what those goals are, that a lot of people might not think it's worth reducing speed. So what does that mean? Like, what does speed reduction mean? And what does limiting how much time it takes me to get to a place mean? I think that those are important things to talk about in this process, because everybody says they want safety, but also everybody doesn't want to be driving 35 on Main Street.
Right.
We see them all the time. So somehow talking about those two and what they mean in the context of these things. So when you talk about landscaping slowing down traffic or roundabouts slowing down traffic, just what does that mean so people know?
Along that same line, that handout that I handed out at the beginning of the meeting, it has to do with, and I know that this is not mentioned as a solution because it has been not listed as a infrastructure change, but the handout that I have here regards red light cameras, stop sign speed cameras, etc. And I'd like us to just read through it and consider it as an idea, as a way to increase safety along Main Street or in other areas of the city. It is not currently being addressed in our Main Street safety corridor plans, but I believe that it should be. And handouts there for. Could you pass that to the counselor?
Sure.
Thank you.
Mr. Vogt.
I'd just like to feed on one of the comments you made about people that are uncomfortable about roundabouts. If the people that are uncomfortable have opportunities to go through the roundabout at Hayden Bridge and Pioneer Parkway, and then go down to the intersection of Q Street and Pioneer Parkway, they would have to notice the difference that a roundabout mm-hmm. makes in those two intersections. Mm-hmm. But I realize, too, there are a lot of people that don't have to deal with the intersections of roundabouts in their travels, so they're always leery of the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think anybody that frequently travels through roundabouts can realize the differences it makes in negotiating the intersections.
Commissioner McGinn.
First, I wanted to concur with what Curry said about speed reduction, but I also wanted to ask if we have statistics and changes in crash data since the roundabout on Pioneer was put in. That was before my time.
We probably have that. It's probably been enough time. I know we don't have data on the Glenwood roundabouts yet, but we can find out.
Let me attempt to address it, and maybe we'll need to follow up. It's almost impossible to do a before and after, because in addition to building the roundabout, we built MLK Parkway and connected that, and so that changed the dynamic in its entirety. The old intersection, I don't know what the crash rates were. It was a county intersection at that point in time, so I wasn't really tuned into it. But the old intersection, I would say, was very awkward to use because of the offset to Wayside Lane. It was signalized and offset from Pioneer Parkway to the south. And so what I can say is that when we initially opened the roundabout, I had asked ODOT to do a study of the roundabout and driver errors, not crashes. Just they videotaped and they observed errors, and they found that initially there were quite a number of errors. It was a brand new thing. But the regression from high rate to low rate followed absolutely the same typical behavior that any human endeavor in you know, that is new and then is learned undertakes. So it was very typical in that regard. I am not aware of a crash problem there in terms of rates compared to other intersections that are similar. And the commissioner identified Parkway and Q as a comparator, and they do have very, very similar traffic volumes and yet very different experience for the users.
Thank you.
I would think it would be fair to guess that I don't know if you have comparative data, the number of crashes at the new situation with the roundabout as opposed to the original configuration, but there has to be a dramatic decrease in the severity of the crashes because of the limits of speed. So yes, that would be a given without actually gaining any specific data.
That is true insofar as I don't have explicit data to
right,
confirm
but
that,
I mean,
but my just awareness generally of crash patterns,
right,
I would
right.
certainly agree with that.
Yeah.
I know that roundabouts also, if there is not a choice, that roundabouts are sometimes a good way to go. But for instance, Laura Street is a bypass to the roundabout, and that's my preferred route. If I have to go to the roundabout, I will. But frankly, I'd much prefer going Laura Street and through the roundabout. Mm-hmm.
So, as I mentioned before, I don't know why the format is wrong, but it's not that way on the computer. We will be doing focus groups in November and December to share the alternative solutions, and also the online open house, and then in January we'll be having meetings with property owners on the corridor to talk about the solutions, and then we will be coming back to you in March or April to share that feedback, and then after that, moving into the refined solutions. Thank you.
Thank you for all that work.
Nice presentation.
Anything else from Commissioner Sherwood? Any other questions? Anything else for the good of the order? Hearing none, we're adjourned.
Good night, guys.
Good night.
Thanks for attending, Troy.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Bye.
Bye.
Really ramped up.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I get it down with medication.
Oh. Illness already.